This podcast is brought to you by WCRFM in Wolverhampton.
I'm Paul Dark, with interviews from Wolverhampton's WCRFM's Our Earth Week of shows, in which we explored Wolverhampton's environmental leadership with lots and lots of guests, from Smesto Valley to Wildside Activity Centre to the canals and much more. And we end this podcast with a touch of art and a look back at how the week went.
As we build up our way to COP28, as we finish off Earth Week, with me in the studio, Dr. Paul Dark and Councillor Claire Dark, after a week of hard work. Well done.
Morning. Thank you.
Morning. It was incredibly hard work, actually. I didn't realise we'd got so many guests corral, I suppose is the word. But actually, everybody enjoyed it, so I think that made it worthwhile in itself. And equally, it's good to put Wolverhampton at the centre of the world for a change in environmental work. And so we've been out. We did a live recording as well that you're going to play later. And yeah. It's all good stuff. Wolverhampton is doing a lot of really good projects, good activity, and I think the thing that one needs to praise most of all is the enormous work that's done by volunteers.
Absolutely, 100%. And seeing them coming in, you know, and hearing all the shows, for those who didn't catch it, then they are on our website. You can get there by the listening again between 2 and 3 every day, Monday to Friday. This week we had the Environment Show, part of Earth Week, part of the Community Radio Environment Network. And Claire, you were out getting all the guests in on time, as they were. You were official photographer as well, I noticed. So and it was just trying to bring it all together so that we can celebrate the amount being done, as Paul rightly says, by volunteers across the city.
Yes, it was fun, and I think a lot of people had a lot more to say, and I think it's a great taster session this week. And I think we'll be hearing more from people, and we'll get them back to talk at length about the other work that they do.
Indeed, absolutely. There'll be lots of opportunities here on WCRFM to do that. Busy week, inspiring week.
Absolutely. I think, you know, I've recently got something a bit more mobile as a wheelchair user, to be able to go down to Smesto Valley and other places, which I've not done. You know, I'm knocking on 60 and I've not done a lot of this until the last few months. And actually, accessibility and then the kind of equipment to do that is life-changing. And I think, you know, I've started to engage more with people doing environmental things. This rail to trail thing is a great opportunity, and almost unbelievably beautiful in when one sees nature in a way that one hasn't seen it before, particularly as a wheelchair user. I don't go on beaches because I get stuck or that kind of thing. Yeah. I don't go in woods. So this rail to trail, and there are these trails all over the country. Wolverhampton's got the Smesto Valley, and there's others as well. It is a real eye-opener, and something that we should all do more of and treasure.
And Claire, you've got a great awareness of the city from your civic role. And there's lots of hidden, beautiful green spaces. And perhaps when people think of Wolverhampton, they don't realise, actually, we've got so many rich resources here. Need looking after by volunteers, but we are rich with resources.
There's all the obvious parks and things, and we have beautiful parks in Wolverhampton. But, yeah, we've got a lot of extra green spaces, and, it's really good. It's really good. And the council do their best to look after all the formal parks and other green spaces. But, you know, we do rest a lot of responsibility on volunteers, and we, you know, we're very grateful for the great work that they do.
Indeed, I always admire people. I sometimes see people walking on the road with a litter picker and a bag, just looking after their place, you know, their street, their road, or whatever it might be, which we all have that responsibility to do, but it's always lovely when you see it.
It is, yeah, it's good.
Paul Dark went down to Smesto Valley and met the chair.
My name's George Rice, and I'm part of the Friends of Smesto Valley group. In fact, I'm the chairman. Today, we're just starting a new project that we're really excited about, and we are starting a new orchard of fruit trees that we're going to plant over the next couple of years.
And how big is this area that you're putting the orchard in?
The area is about 50 or 60 yards long, and it's about 20 or 30 yards deep, so we'll get 40 or 50 trees in there, we hope. and they will grow up to be fruit trees and provide fruit and beautiful blossom and a good habitat for wildlife as well.
And so what's actually here at the moment that we're scything?
Well, you can hear the noise of people cutting. What there is here is just a field of nettles, and nettles are quite good for wildlife, lots of butterflies and caterpillars. But to be honest, we've got so many nettles here that getting rid of a few of them is not going to be a problem at all.
Nettles are indicative of good soil?
Nettles are very indicative of good soil. They grow on rich soil, which means that we are hopeful that the fruit trees will think it's good soil too and that they'll grow well as well.
And so how long has the Friends of Smethstow Valley been going, and how long have you been involved?
Well, Friends of Smethstow Valley is itself quite a new group. It only started at the beginning of the year. We're all volunteers, but most of the volunteers before that were volunteering with another organisation, the Birmingham and Black Country Wildlife Trust, and they had to pull out because of funding reasons. And at that point, we decided we'd set up our own group and carry on doing the volunteering that we've been doing for 6, 7, 8 years, perhaps.
And why is it important to have such volunteer groups in places like this?
Well, we've got a big nature reserve here. Nature does a lot of its own maintenance. It looks after itself, but it does actually also need some intervention now and then. And humans are part of the landscape here. There are animals that we might have had here. You know, if the thing had been a really wild setting thousands of years ago, there'd have been wild horses and wild cows and wild pigs going through. And, of course, we've got none of that now. So humans, to some extent, need to do some of the job that, in the past, big animals would have done. And we can help improve the habitats, make the area better for wildlife overall by doing bits and pieces, tidying up sometimes, or planting new things, or creating some open spaces. And in this case, by bringing in an orchard of fruit trees.
And I take it that this entire process, permissions from the city council, all that kind of stuff, it's not easy. Tell us a bit about that process.
Yeah, we've been nearly 2 years in trying to get this orchard to happen, and you need to have the city council as the landowner. They need to be happy that the project is a suitable project and that the people are going to look after it. We're not just going to plant the trees and one day and disappear off the next. So we've been trying to show how we would look after the project and look after the orchard into the future. Of course, you need to get the funding. You need to make sure that you're doing the job properly as well, and, you know, get the information, get the advice before you set out on it.
So who are you getting the funding from, and who's giving you the plants, things like that?
We're getting the funding from various places. We've had a grant from Wolverhampton Homes that's helped us, had a grant from the Beattie Trust, had a grant of grants from other people as well, which we're very grateful for. We've also going to get funding from co-op membership. So if you're a member of co-op and you want to pick us as one of the projects that you support, that would be great. Friends of Smethstow Valley, we're called. And we're also getting trees and plants from other organisations, Outside Centre, notably one of them, and from the Woodland Trust as well.
When do you envisage it being finished, i.e. an orchard here with trees on and people going around it?
We are aiming to plant hedge around the edge of the orchard this winter, and then to get the fruit trees in next winter. It's not really suitable to plant trees in the summer because they dry out and they don't do well. Much better off planting in the winter. So we're going to take 2 winters to do this. The hedge is quite an important bit of the orchard. It will protect the trees from people just, you know, going in and anybody who might want to cause damage. And in itself, the hedge will be really good for nesting birds and for insects. And we need the insects to pollinate the fruit trees so we get fruit. So the hedge is just as much a part of the orchard, really, as the fruit trees themselves.
What's your personal route to doing this? Why are you involved in this organisation and this kind of environmental preservation project?
Well, my personal route to doing the orchard is that I grew up in Kent, which was used to be known as the Garden of England and surrounded by fruit trees and apples. And everybody was just really interested in fruit trees. It was something people did, and they planted different varieties in their gardens. And you'd go out into the countryside and there'd be farms and lovely orchards and blossom in the spring. And people would get casual jobs picking fruit, sometimes picking hops. So it was just something I grew up with, and knowing about apple trees and knowing about all the different varieties and taking an interest in them was just part of my childhood. So I find it a bit sad that that knowledge is being lost, and it'd be something I'd be keen that, you know, we could share more and do open days here and get people involved so that they can find them. Britain has, I think, 1,500 different types of apples. You go to the supermarket and you usually see about 4 or 5 different varieties. So I think there's a lot of what you might call grassroots knowledge that could be shared. So that's one of the things that I feel quite passionate about, I suppose. More generally, I'm involved in environmental things. I think we live in a beautiful world, and some of the things you see are amazing. Some of the little tiny details, just how life happens, how it thrives, we're part of it. And we also know that although it's wonderful, it's also quite threatened. Svesto Valley at a local level is a beautiful place. People love going for a walk here. They enjoy the green space. But in wildlife terms, it's kind of so-so. It could be a lot better than it is with a bit more care, a bit more input. We could have many more different species here, more butterflies, dragonflies, birds, plants, flowers. And I think once we get a group together, like we've done with Friends of Svesto Valley, then we can really start to make some progress and improve the whole area for wildlife. We'll be planting different species, different types of apples, pears, plums, cherries perhaps, and some of these varieties of, you know, they're almost disappearing, and we would like to find some of the ones that are more under threat, going to be lost if people don't plant them. So we won't be planting just all the standard ones that people typically plant, but we'll be trying to find some of the rarer ones, some of the heritage varieties, and planting them. And we'll be going to some specialist places. So for example, Tetnall has its own very own type of pear tree, a Tetnall dick it's called, and where it could be better to plant it than in a nature reserve in Tetnall.
And so what educational activities are you going to do around this?
We're going to have volunteer days like we're doing today and get people involved in practical skills, maintaining the orchard, telling them about it. We're going to have specialist days when people can come and pick apples and see the apples, and perhaps do, if we get a decent crop, we can do some apple juicing, bring in children, schools, have family activity days. There's really a lot of different things you can do throughout the year in terms of education and also in terms of maintenance and just people having a lovely day outside. And then there'll obviously also be all the people who walk by, so we'll have some information for people on panels, boards, so that they can see what's going on and find out about it.
That's George Rice, who is the chair of Svesto Valley. And well done, Paul, chatting to him there and getting all that beautiful background noise, all the bird sound, all the bird noise there.
I try. No, it was a pretty chilly sort of morning, but it was really nice. It was a winter's morning out there. Everybody's hacking down the nettles and you know, just talking about what it's going to be. You know, it's taken a long time to get to that point, and it'll be 2 or 3 years before an orchard is there. You know, but it's going to be a really magnificent place to wander by, walk through, walk in. It's next to the canal, next to the valley walk. You know, the brook's pretty close by. And as I said, you know, I saw a heron in the brook the other day. Right. And it was just fantastic.
No, absolutely, absolutely great. Inspiring to get down there. Again, you're saying earlier about volunteers, Claire, we'll hear from a couple that you chatted to in a moment or two's time. But again, it's all dependent on them and giving their time up to do that.
Well, George is a volunteer and he's very knowledgeable about wildlife and butterflies. He knows all the names of everything. But he also has a great knowledge on the trees and things as well.
Yeah.
But you don't have to be knowledgeable. I mean, I went down and hacked away at the stinging nettles. I learned how to use a scythe, but you could just chop away with the choppers. And, you know, so there's an opportunity to learn new skills, but also absorb knowledge off people in other ways. And, you know, it was really good fun.
No, it sounded good. Well, I learned, so next time I look at nettles in my garden, I'll be thinking, that's a sign of really good soil, which will be a consolation to me. With me are Paul and Claire Dark, who've been down to Smesto Valley. We heard Paul talking to Chair George Rice, and then Claire, I should say, went off to find some volunteers, and she first of all found Hillary and asked her how long she'd been involved there.
I've been volunteering Smesto Valley now since really about when it was started, probably 8-10 years ago with the Wildlife Trust wanted volunteers, so I've been here for a long time. I'm now a trustee of the Friends, so obviously got a vested interest in getting everything, you know, getting as many volunteers as possible to come and help us, and keeping the valley, you know, looking lovely and thriving for the local community.
Excellent. And what are you doing this morning?
This morning we're clearing a big nettle and bramble patch so that we can later on plant a community orchard, which is just down from Cupcake Lane where the little cafe is. So it's in a good location for people to come and see it and hopefully pick fruit in the future. And we're going to plant a hedge around to protect it. And we might get some of that done today with a bit of luck.
And what are the problems you face getting volunteers to go and help?
We've got a core, which are very good about turning up. So there's a core of volunteers. And we get other people coming occasionally. And that's wonderful. And we know them. That's great. I think it's awkward because we're on a Thursday. And obviously, I know some people would come and help us, and we don't do weekends at the moment, but it's something we might do in the future, do that perhaps one weekend, you know, a day a month, perhaps, to get other people to come out and help. But obviously, there's a lot of people who might come who are working and can't give up time. And I think some people probably think it's too much of a commitment, but maybe, you know, they don't realise they can just come for a couple of hours. They don't need to come if it's pouring as rain.
Yeah, there's been somebody just here for an hour this morning.
Yes, exactly. Yes,
you do litter picks at the weekend.
We do litter picks at the weekend. We've got one this weekend, which we'd love to see. Oh, that would be on Monday. Sorry.
Yeah, have another one coming up soon.
We have regular litter picks where anybody's welcome to turn.
But can we find out your activities?
It's on our Facebook page, and quite often the litter picks are advertised in the valley. There'll be a sign up saying there's going to be a litter pick, with the date. So.
Well, I think you've got an email list as well that you can send.
We can put people on our email list and they can get notifications. Doesn't mean to say they have to turn up, but they can keep an eye on what's going on, and if they fancy coming and joining us one day.
Okay.
That'd be lovely.
Let's hope we recruit some more help.
Let's hope so. That would be very good.
You're Sue, are you?
I am, yes.
And what are you doing here today?
I'm helping to trim back the brambles and the nettles as we prepare for the orchard.
Excellent. And why are we doing that?
Because we're trying to bring the land back to how it was originally and to make it more favourable for nature and to grow some fruit trees eventually.
Excellent. Looking forward to planting that later on.
Yes.
So how did you get involved in this group?
I live locally and I enjoy walking here and enjoy exercise, and it seemed to combine the two. It's a very friendly, supportive group, and I've learnt a lot since I retired. I've come here and I've learnt a lot about nature, which is fascinating, and of course we all need to help to look after our planet.
So what other activities have you done with the Smesto Valley?
We've done a lot of hazel coppicing so that we can plant more flora, and we've been planting wild daffodils, and there are lots of flowers already there, but they've got too much shade, so we've been clearing glades so the sun can get in and allow the flowers to blossom, especially in the spring. There's beautiful primroses, which at the moment are hidden under all the leaves, but they spring out when the spring comes.
That was Sue, and before that you heard from Hilary, two of the great volunteers down at Smesto Valley, talking to Claire. A lot of hard work involved with this, getting rid of nettles and brambles and stuff to prepare the way.
It was quite hard work on that particular session, but I think you work at your own pace, don't you?
Yeah.
And you can get involved in that, or you can go and plant bulbs on a different day, or go litter picking. I mean, they do different activities every week. They're there every Thursday morning. And, it's a really good session, actually. It's nice. It's fun.
And great for people's mental health and well-being as well, isn't it? Just to go out there, enjoy a bit of fresh air and think to the future and look forward to something growing there. Because actually it takes a while to get the orchard established.
Yeah. And they're a really friendly bunch. And also, it's near that Cupcake Cafe, and you can get a nice slice of cake while you're down there.
I know, in Cupcake Lane, I thought if there's ever a place where you should have a cafe, it is in Cupcake Lane as well.
It is very good, very good.
And they often say, you know, the best time to have planted a tree was 50 years ago. The next best time is tomorrow, isn't it? So.
Guest by name and nature, David Guest. How are you?
I'm very well, thank you.
Excellent. I'm glad to hear it. So, we're going to talk a bit about your work with Smesto Valley and the whole point about trying to get children involved in local kind of environment and history.
Yes, well, I've been teaching in Wolverhampton all my life, mostly in primary schools, which means, like most primary school teachers, we know a little bit about a lot. When I retired, then you have a bit more time, and so I started volunteering with in Smesto Valley, two groups. So Waterside Care with a man called John Rowley, and Lough Country Wildlife Trust. And while I was doing that, I casually mentioned that this might be the place for a Battle of Tettenhall. I didn't know I was speaking to a historian. So he challenged me. How did I know? What was the proof? I didn't know what the proof was, so I went away and found out, and it became more and more interesting as I went on.
So working in primary schools, I think one of the key things about teaching people about the environment is aiming it at primary school children. That's essential. How easy do you think it is to get it across to children, the importance of the environment and history?
Well, I think the first thing, is to get them out into the environment.
Mm-hmm.
Once they're out in the environment and they start seeing things and have things to look at, then children very, very quickly become interested. Certainly when I was teaching, in the good old days, we never missed a chance to get out and show them what was there, show them how to look, how to see. I was very fortunate that I met somebody called Phil Tiplady at what used to be the Gorge at Sedgley. As a local council, we took the children there, we camped there, and they were amazed at what they saw.
Mm.
And that also involved history, because you had the environment, you had the animals there, you had the plants and flowers, but then they also had the history of the iron industry, because the limestone works there. Once you've got them out there and looking at things and things to look at, suddenly the work's done for you. They're involved and they're interested.
But it's becoming increasingly hard to get children out into the country, and it is in a town, a city like Wolverhampton, it is quite difficult, because we are quite an industrial based society, even there's less of that now, but it is very important for some children, or lots of children, who may almost never have been in the country to some extent.
Yeah, and I think part of what became very obvious to me, that the Smesto Valley is just a fantastic resource.
Mm.
Environmentally, it's absolutely brilliant. There is so much to see now, and with the Black Country Wildlife particularly, improving it, so creating the wildflower meadows, the woodland habitats, the wildlife that's come in there. I think we've got over at least 80 species of birds, for instance, going through. And then on top of that, when I started finding out that this is also a place of great historical interest, then it was kind of like a whole set. You had a fantastic story to tell, not just of local importance, but actually of national importance. And again, when you teach children history, which is local to them, then they start getting interested. If you're talking about places, so if we're doing like the Anglo-Saxons and the Vikings, if you're talking about monks in Northumbria, it's not going to mean a lot to them. But if you're talking about a battle on their doorstep, which they can picture and imagine and build on their imagination, then you can start getting them interested.
Because a lot of, in fact, battle sites from that kind of era are often in the Green Belt. They are kind of very kind of environmentally friendly sites. And so tell us a bit more, because you've got a book. Tell us about the book first.
Yeah, right. Well, we put a panel, first of all, in the Smesto Valley about the Battle of Tetnal Stroke Wensfield. And it's of national importance, I say, and I realised this when I read a book by Thomas Williams, who's the curator of the Viking Museum, the British Museum, which is said that the battle was the turning point in the war between the Anglo-Saxons and the Vikings. And as a result of that, Ethelfled, the Lady of the Mercians, who was Alfred's daughter, retook all that Danelaw territory, which her father had sort of given to the Danes, and actually retook York. Mm-hmm. This was something we were never taught about at school. I never knew anything about this, really, at school. Mm-hmm. So it's also kind of a national story as well. So first of all, we put the panel in, and then I was asked by a local councillor, would I do a leaflet? I thought a leaflet didn't do justice, so produced a book with a local company, the studio at Tetnal. A beautiful book.
It is a beautiful book.
Beautifully illustrated. Mm-hmm. And to try to tell the story of Ethelfled, the Lady of the Mercians, her role actually in creating what is now our country of England. So that's how it came about.
Mm. This is the Battle of Tetnal or the Battle of Wensfield. Yeah. Do you sort of favour one, or is it just that it's both or in the middle?
I've looked quite a lot of the evidence. I know people in Wensfield, some say Wensfield, but when I looked at the evidence, looked in context, most of the information comes from people writing chronicles in Wessex at the time. Mm. When you take that into account and add in this Mercian register, which is added to Anglo-Saxon chronicles, it seems to me that logically that the place for an army to meet, an Anglo-Saxon army, would have been Wodensfeld. Mm. Because every Anglo-Saxon would know about Woden, and Wodensfeld must have been a significant place. Whereas Tettenhall, which is Teotenhalla, or lookout over the water meadows, there's lots of Teutons, Tettens, Tottens. They all have the same etymology. Nobody would have known where that is.
Yeah.
So in my view, Wodensfeld would have been the place to meet. And then you simply send your army into the Smesto Valley. It's wooded. You have marshlands, soggy bots at the bottom. You've got a raiding army of Vikings, large raiding army, coming back from Bridge North. If you attack them in that valley, then they wouldn't have a chance. Water and horses and armour, they don't mix. There's plenty of examples.
So this fantastic book, where can we get it?
At the moment, hopefully, in about a week or so's time, in time for Christmas, it should be on sale in Waterstones.
Waterstones in Wolverhampton.
I've given some also to the Cupcake and to the museum, Transport Museum, at Cupcake Lane. Mm-hmm. So get them there. Or I suppose if they contact me.
Do you have a web an email?
Well,
you
I
want?
Have the email, yeah. guestdavid@sky.com, and I'll make sure I can get it.
And how much is it?
Well, if they come directly to me, I will sell them for a very reasonable £5.
Brilliant.
Waterstones, it might be a little bit more.
Brilliant. Well, thank you for coming on.
Okay, it's my pleasure.
Hi, Paul. I'm the grandly titled Business Development Manager for Wildside Activity Centre.
The boss.
Well, some people think that.
So, Wildside Centre is down Hawdon Road, and it's by the canals and by Smesto Valley. It's in as a key place, and you are a kind of key player in the city to promote environmental work and kind of green stuff. So tell us, let's start with the water source heat pump that you've just had fitted to Wildside.
Okay, yeah, we're fortunate to get some grant. Well, actually, it came probably about 10 years ago when it was recommended to us by the Centre for Alternative Technology, and they said, you buy water, it would be a fantastic way to do sustainable energy, produce sustainable energy by having a water source heat pump. So we got a grant for it. I picked it up, I got a grant for it, and it was installed in December last year. And essentially because we've got solar panels and battery system as well, it basically provides all our electricity for no point of sale cost, and sustainable, no carbon emissions.
Brilliant. And so, if you don't mind, how much did that cost, the water source heat pump?
That's the big thing. I mean, as a small charity, there's no way in the world we'd have ever been able to afford it without a substantial grant. And we got a grant. The actual cost of the whole system was £58,000.
£58,000, that's a lot of money.
It's a lot of money. But then we looked at the savings, or certainly the savings that we seem to be making, and the potential savings that we looked at when we looked at the system. And within 5 years, we'd have probably paid off that system.
Excellent, excellent. And so you're also getting a log cabin at Wildside Activity Centre.
Yeah, one of the things we've sort of looked at is that we've got one main inside room. Obviously, our ethos is about people going outside and engaging with nature, but we've got one main inside room. And, you know, there are many occasions where we looking at double bookings, we can't, you know, accommodate people. So we wanted to look at how we could accommodate more groups, more individuals. And we thought also, we've got a small piece of woodland, as you said, at Wildside. So why not have something that's in the woods so people get the idea of being, although we're in the middle of the city, there, you know, it can be in the middle of the woodland, almost down at the end of their street. So, yeah, we're building a log cabin. It'll enable us to offer more groups, more activities on a daily, weekly, monthly basis. But people have that feeling of actually being in the woodlands while they're here.
And so I don't forget, because I always get people to do it in the middle. So how do people find out about you? Have you got a website, all those kind of details?
We have indeed, yeah. It's obviously www.wildsideac.co.uk. Mm-hmm. We're on Facebook as well, and we have an Instagram account. We're just about to go into the real modern world and have a TikTok platform. So
a TikTok platform?
Yeah.
And are you aimed at a particular age group? Do you aim yourself at younger people, older people, or the whole of the community? And so, for example, do you do a lot of work with schools?
Yes, actually, on all fronts, really. Our ethos is all ages, all abilities, and we want people to reconnect and engage with nature. So we work with all ages, from preschoolers. We have a forest school-based group called Little Explorers. And then we work with people who are older, you know, elderly people, who may just want to come and, you know, have a narrowboat trip. We have a narrowboat on the canal. So, yeah, all ages. And as I say, all abilities. We try and make our activities as absolutely as accessible as possible.
And you also hire out your rooms as well, don't you?
We do, yeah. If there's any groups in the community who want to have a meetings room which overlooks the canal, which we've got car parking spaces, although we obviously try and encourage people to, you know, come on bikes, etc., mm-hmm. use public transport. But we have got a car park, and we've got a meetings room that can take up to 40 people.
And so tell us about your Christmas programme, which I know involves the canal boat or longboat. What are we calling it?
Narrowboat, yeah.
Narrowboat. I got there in the end. Well, you got there in the end.
I made the huge mistake of calling it a barge when I first started there, and I was told by, you know, the narrowboat experts
criminal.
There.
Absolutely. Criminal calling it
absolutely.
That. Not that anybody would know the difference, except a specialist, so. So your Christmas programme?
Yeah, we've got, I mean, the boat is pretty much going out every day up until about the 19th of December, and the majority will be Santa boat trips. So there'll be a special, you know, guest on the boats where children, and indeed adults, if you want to come along, but, you know, families can come along, meet Santa. And again, it's about celebration of the time as much as Christmas. It's about celebration for all communities, all faiths. But yeah, Santa will be there as a special guest. He'll meet the children and the adults, and there'll be little gifts, sort of environmentally based gifts that we've made through some natural products. So yeah, we hope lots of people will come along.
And do you have volunteer days where people can come along and do stuff?
Yes, we do. We run a specific conservation volunteer group, and that runs on a Tuesday and Thursday. So anybody wants to come along, I mean, the best thing to do is contact us in the first instance. But we offer all sorts of activities where people can get involved in doing conservation work, habitat management, that sort of thing. And we also got a smaller volunteer group, which is working with 18 to 25 year olds who are out of the work job market, out of unemployed. So again, offering them sort of skill based activities, but also support with, you know, CVs, interview techniques, that sort of thing.
And the final thing, because a lot of people don't mention it, you're open to donations as well.
We're always open to donations.
From anybody, businesses, sponsorship, for all that kind of stuff as well.
Absolutely, yeah. We'd like to work with more businesses to say, hey, come along, do some team building days, you know, come and see how we can benefit your business. So it's a sort of investment. But yeah, any support that we can get from anywhere, we don't have funding other than that we can raise ourselves.
And so, again, tell us how to contact you for all of this great stuff that you're doing. I know you're a core part of what Wolverhampton does for the environment, particularly on this side of town. So how do people contact you again?
Yeah, we'd love people to contact us either through the website, as I say, www.wildsiteac.co.uk, or give us a call on 01902 754 612. Just pick up the phone, or you can email me directly if you'd like to on mark@wildsiteac.co.uk.
Mark Hand, thank you very much for coming in. In the studio with me now is the legend of local environmental activity, which is John Rowley. Welcome.
Thank you for that introduction, Paul.
So, you know, we've only got 6 minutes, and I know we could talk for hours, and we really could, about all that you've done, all that you're involved in. But tell us mainly, to start with, about the Castlecroft Bridge project.
Okay. The Castlecroft Bridge project was, well, as its name implies, a bridge over the railway walk in Castlecroft. It's the old railway walk.
That was my fault. Isn't that terrible? Okay. I've told everybody to go silent, but
and what we did, this is a REN, is a Rittick and Regis Enterprise Network. Provided an all-access ramp at Hawarden Road about 6 years before, and raised £94,000 for that. And we felt we needed to do a similar sort of thing, make access all access to the railway walk. So we looked at the possibility of a ramp there. But the cost proved prohibitive. It was over £200,000. So therefore, what we did, we got the Parks Department, who were very good. They came in, stepped in, and they gave us an all-access walk down to the railway walk, and also some steps at the bridge. So what we did then was we added a welcome platform with a bench at the top of the steps and tackled the antisocial behaviour that was going on underneath it. Now, to do that, we went to the local school and said, look, we'd like you to do some a mural. And we got a local graffiti artist to go in and talk to the children. And they designed this little mural. And then we put it on the bridge. The mayor came along, the parents came along, all the dignitaries came along. And it was fantastic. And the kids thoroughly enjoyed themselves on that afternoon. And then
absolutely brilliant. But I want to talk to you about some other things as well. And you were leading a person, a component of Saving the WEC for the city, which is the Wolverhampton Environment Centre. Tell us about that and why that is an important space within Wolverhampton.
Well, it's an important space in Wolverhampton because it's what the residents of Tetnor wanted to save. In the Tetnor neighbourhood plan, they were quite clear. They made the point that they didn't want any development on that.
And it took you 7 years.
It took 7 years to took 7 years. And I say we persuade the council to change its mind, but of course the Black Country plan fell down, and that is why one of the reasons we were successful. But we got over a thousand people on petition to support our opposition to these buildings.
But now it's saved.
Yeah.
What's the next stage for the WEC?
Well, the next stage is to get as many volunteers in as possible to work on the WEC and maintain it, because it's a beautiful area. It's got a lot of historical context, and it's environmentally very interesting. And I work there with my colleagues who were speaking to you on Tuesday, and I also run another voluntary organisation called the Waterside Care, and we're deeply interested in getting the place to look after, so that other people come along and use it and enjoy it. And our main aim, well, my main aim is litter. Mm. You know, this is the whole thing that has motivated me, that people will people, once they've picked up litter, then they get engaged in the place, they get ownership of the place, and they keep on coming back and keeping an eye on it. And
how if people want to volunteer, they've heard you now and they want to volunteer, how do they contact you?
Well, they can contact us on Facebook. Best one is the Friends of the Smester Valley on Facebook. You'll see.
And that'll be for the WEC as well.
And that'll be for the WEC as well, yes.
Excellent. Yeah. And so we're running out of time, and it's been brilliant to have you on here. And we will have you back because you have done so much and for the sea in all that you've done. And that accessible ramp down by the new bridge thing, I recommend everybody goes on it. And it's an absolutely fantastic achievement. And I just want to thank you from the people of Wolverhampton.
Well, yeah, I did it because I enjoy it.
And we're going to talk about Smestow Valley in the main.
Indeed.
And tell us what your roles are first, Steve.
Okay, so I am secretary of the Friends of Smestow Valley group. And we set up in February time, George, as a result of we've been working together as conservation team since 2016 with the Wildlife Trust. Sadly, the Wildlife Trust funding finished at the end of the financial year, so we as a group decided to keep going, and so we've set up a community group called Friends of Smestow Valley, and George is our chair.
I'm the chair for the time being, yes, that's right.
And so what's the aim of the Smestow Valley Friends?
So the Friends of Smestow Valley is there to try and help look after the Smestow Valley Nature Reserve, which is the biggest green space in Wolverhampton. It's a nature reserve, so obviously we want to do lots for wildlife and to have more wildlife there, have more different plants and birds and insects and fungi, and just make it a better place for wildlife overall. But it's also a reserve that's surrounded by tens of thousands of people living within, 20 minutes of Smestow Valley. So it's got to be a good place for people too. And so we're sort of balancing the people side of it with the wildlife side of it.
And of course, right through it is the rail to trail, which is the kind of the walk that used to be an old railway line. Is that right?
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, so the reserve is based around the old railway line that used to run from Wolverhampton, and it was supposed to go to Bridge North, but funding ran out, and I think it eventually went down to the ironworks at Pensnet.
That's right, and then down into Dudley.
Yeah,
and they changed the plan before they even started building it. It was a bit like HS2, but.
So I go down it, and it's a fascinating place because I've lived in Wolverhampton for 40 years. I've lived right next to it for the last 10, and I've only started going down it in the last 6 months.
Really? A lot of people that's true of, you know, people think, oh, am I allowed to go there? And it's quite tucked away, quite hidden, quite a lot of it. So it's the old railway, which can sometimes be a bit difficult to get down onto if it's in a cutting. But in the last 3 to 5 years, we've managed to improve the surfaces of the paths a lot, and a lot of work's gone into that, so they're much more accessible now than they used to be. And then, as well as the old railway, there's the old canal, the Staffs Worcester Canal, which was is 250 years old almost exactly, and the old railway is 100 years old, so they've both got anniversaries. And then of course there's also the Smestow Brook that runs through the middle of it, so you've kind of got three strands running down the middle. You've got the canal, the stream, and the railway.
And it's all technically owned by the City Council?
Not quite all of it. City Council owns most of it, but the canal is owned by the Canal and River Trust.
Right.
But if you're a bird or a bee or
a person,
then, you know, they just all integrate, they all interconnect.
Right. So volunteers, I take it, are very important.
They are. I mean, one of the key drivers for us keeping the group together was we were all having a good time. We didn't want to lose our sort of green gym activities on a Thursday. So Yeah, I mean, we enjoy it. It's great to socialise, meet people, get a bit of gentle exercise, be out in a green space and sort of get the well-being, you know, get those endorphins kicking in. So, yeah.
So why are green spaces important?
Green spaces are really important for people's health. There's some research that shows that if you're in a hospital and you can see a tree from your hospital bed, that on average you'll get better one day quicker, which is really quite a big deal when you think of how much hospitals cost. And just more generally, if we're out in green spaces, it just creates our whole sense of well-being. It helps us to relax, helps us to feel better in ourselves. So they do play an important role. And then on a wider scale, you know, we're all part of Mother Nature. We're all dependent on nature, and it's important that nature is flourishing around us. And by having nature reserves, we can protect and even sometimes make places better for nature.
Right. So how can someone volunteer?
Right. I mean, the best thing for people to do if they're interested is to email us at friendsofsmestervalley@outlook.com. So friendsofsmestervalley@outlook.com. And if you drop me an email, I'll let you know how to get involved, when you can volunteer, the sort of things we do.
Alternatively, you could look at the Facebook page, Friends of Smester Valley Facebook page, and can contact us through that.
Tell us about your next event. You've got a litter pick coming up.
Yeah, we have been holding monthly litter picks for the last couple of years, and conveniently we've got one this Saturday the 25th, and we're meeting at 10 a.m. on the car park at Horden Road, and the postcode for that is WV6OHS. It's just past Wildside Activity Centre as you come out of the city centre. All equipment provided, but best to bring your own gloves because we're very short of gloves. And it'd be great to get people out and do a bit of exercise and clean up the reserve.
Brilliant. Tell us about kind of like what you need in order to make this a bigger success than it already is.
Right. But the key to a lot of this is money, of course. And little plug here, we have been picked as one of the co-op good causes for this year. So if anybody listening is a co-op shopper and you've got a co-op membership card, please nominate us as your good cause. The number is 83950, and they will give a penny in the pound of your spend to us that we can use to buy plants and materials for our work on the reserve. So, yep, thank you. Yeah.
So we do need money, but we also need people and time. So we're an all-volunteer group. We don't pay anybody. It's all done by volunteers. And we meet every Thursday. We go out and work parties, and we sort out whatever needs sorting out or start new projects. One of the new projects that we're just starting out on, we started just last week, is we want to plant an orchard, which is a real lack of fruit trees around. And orchards are wonderful places for wildlife as well as for humans, because they look really nice and they give everybody a good feel-good factor with the blossom in the spring and the fruit in the autumn. So we're starting out planting an orchard. We're putting a hedge around it, which will be great for wildlife, for birds and insects. And then next year we want to put the fruit trees in, so that would be an expense that we will have to find funding for. If anybody wants to sponsor buying fruit trees for an orchard, that would be wonderful.
And can people give you fruit trees?
Well, on the whole, I think we're looking for particular sorts. So we're hoping to go and find rare sorts of fruit trees that are endangered, heritage varieties that are dying out, unusual ones that will give us something to talk about with people who, you know, they may not have come across this particular sort. We're not just going to go to the garden centre and buy any old trees. We're looking for something a bit special here.
And really, we're looking for local varieties where possible.
Right. So. Well, I'm going to play a bit of an interview I did with you last Thursday at the first kind of cutting down of the brambles on that. So I'll play that there in the week. But how much is collaboration important in what you do?
We do a lot of collaboration. Smester Valley is quite a big site. It's over 50 hectares. It's 3 miles long. It's surrounded by thousands and thousands of people. And it belongs to different organisations, the Council, Canal and River Trust. We've got the Wildside Activity Centre, which is there. We've got the Wildlife Trust, who have been helping to look after it. There's groups in Finchfield who are trying to keep the Finchfield Brook nice and clean and keep that good. It is important that we don't get in each other's way. So every 2 or 3 months, we all meet up and we make sure that we're kind of not about to cut down the trees that somebody else has just planted or do the wrong thing in the wrong place. So collaboration is quite key.
Yeah, and we've just started doing some work with Severn Trent to try and actually clean up the Smestow Brook, because there's a lot of rubbish in there, because the Smestow Brook is actually culverted underneath the city centre. So all sorts of nastiness comes gushing out onto the nature reserve. So, yeah, we just starting to work with them about trying to clean it.
Well, I think a couple of times ago I was down there, I saw a heron in the brook, which was quite exciting.
You saw it in the brook or on the canal?
In the brook.
In the brook, that's good.
In the brook. You know, you go over the metal bridge, you come down, you turn left onto that, that smaller one, the bit on the left, which is the brook.
Yeah, there's nothing like the amount of wildlife in that brook that there should be. It should be a beautiful, babbling brook with lots and lots of stuff in it. And it's really quite poor because of the pollution.
It does prove how quickly nature cleans itself up. Sort of within a mile of coming out of the culvert, it's clean enough for the heron to be fishing in.
One final question, the future.
Okay. Well, I would like to carry on doing what we're doing, which is planting lots of trees, doing our bit to try and tackle climate change. George?
We've got a great, lovely nature reserve there. It's a really good space for Wolverhampton. It could be even better. It could be better for wildlife. It could be better for people. We could clean up the water. We've got this orchard project. And another thing we've got in mind is that we could increase the size of it. There are bits of land there that people think are in the nature reserve and they aren't. And there are bits that are next door, which would be really beneficial to the whole thing to include them in it. So we're thinking maybe we should encourage the council to increase the size of the nature reserve. That would be quite a big win.
And again, final, how do they contact you again? One more time.
Okay, so our email is friendsofsmestervalley@outlook.com. So, yeah, please do get in touch.
It's been a pleasure to have you here from the Canal River Trust, because Wolverhampton has a lot of canals, and it's Paul Wilkinson. So you cover Wolverhampton, do you, for the Canal Trust?
Hi, Paul. Yes, I do.
Which is probably better than Birmingham, which I'm told has more canals than Venice.
I cover the West Midlands.
Do you?
And so, I love all the canals equally.
We all love all the canals equally, but we love Wolverhampton canals just a little bit more. So tell us about your work. What do you do on the Canal River Trust?
So I work for the Canal River Trust, which is a charity that looks after 2,000 miles of waterways in the country. I'm a senior ecologist that works with our engineers and our projects teams and our volunteers and basically everything that goes on our waterways. We have environmental appraisals for, so we make sure that we protect and enhance the natural environment while we're carrying out our essential maintenance.
And do they require a lot of maintenance and essential work?
Yes, they're around 250 years old, and they're often highly heritage, historic value, and they're built to transport. They were built to transport coal and heavy bulky materials near their recreation. So they were built to move water around, and obviously water tries to find its own way. Mm-hmm. So there's an incredible amount of water maintenance that's required, taking water from reservoirs, getting it through the locks from the towns to the rural areas, and all the water is passed down to the rivers. So it's all, once it goes through a lock, it's gone, it's moved on. So there's an incredible amount, and bridges and all those sort of tunnels.
And so as an ecologist, how important is looking after the wildlife on the canals?
So they've absolutely been transformed, and they are now green and blue corridors. And when you look in our landscapes of how we restore nature and how we can help nature thrive and recover some of the things that have declined, and environmental issues, they're just so easy, green and blue corridors through all our cities and all our urban areas and through rural areas, which can be highly agricultural. So that they have such a key role to play in conservation. They connect rural to city, Lots of species from one habitat to another, nature reserves to another nature reserve. And it's so difficult to try and connect nature, which we have to do, to people, any other route.
And so, and you're an organisation that is incredibly proactive in that.
Yes.
And how, give us a demonstration of what you might do or something that you've done in Wolverhampton particularly.
So in Wolverhampton, we have, we recently organised a green flag for the Wolverhampton 21 lock flight. And that is a Keep Britain Tidy award, that it's a recognition that it's a really high quality environment for the public. Mm-hmm. So we've got a management plan with that, and we've got a series of enhancements to improve the Wolverhampton lock. If you walk down there, it's such a transformation from when you walk from the city down the Wolverhampton. It's like going back in time. It's such a beautiful canal corridor. It's the start of our Great Canal Orchard. So we're starting at Aldersley Junction, and we're taking an orchard. We're meeting up down at the River Severn in Diglas. So this Great Canal Orchard will be over 50 miles. It's a really challenging project. It's a community orchard for the public because I want people free fruit, and the blossom in the spring, and the benefit of trees bring to our environment of absorbing and blocking pollutants, and creating cooling environments in hot periods. Absorbing water, during wet periods. So it's a really, I loved pinching fruit when I was a child. That's where it comes from.
Don't we call it scrumping?
Scrumping. I was going to use.
We should use the word pinch, really. Yeah. Huh? That's probably legal.
Borrowing. Yeah. So we're going to provide fruit for everybody to have access to, and all sorts of fruit. We've got to adapt. Not just the traditional varieties, like there was the Technol Dick pear, which is quite unique to Wolverhampton, very rare tree. But, if these trees are going to be at the best in 100 years' time. Mm. So we're thinking about species or varieties from the Mediterranean even that are going to be more inclined and mix it all up so they're not all vulnerable to the way the climate can be now.
Mm-hmm. And so have you got a time scale for that? And I'm presuming that's like a decade-long plan or something, isn't it?
I'm keeping it open.
You're keeping it open.
I hope 10 years. But
you hope 10 years.
20, it's a large
And this is
project.
All reliant on public funding, both from government grants, I presume you get as well, and charitable donations?
Everywhere. We have a lot of corporate social responsibility donations. We have public volunteering their time, and we have wonderful donations from members of the public.
And I take it you get income from canal license, boat licenses, and
all sorts of property,
licenses.
And yes, there's a package that we put.
And you're now a much more environmentally friendly organisation because since COVID, you're all working from home.
Yeah, that is one of the things that has reduced our general commute
and expenses to some extent as well. So it's saving money and making the environment better. Yeah. So you live next to Wolverhampton. So do you come and walk the canals for fun?
I do every weekend. Yes,
and what would you recommend others do it?
You have to. It's such a good for your well-being and escapism and clean air, and you will see amazing wildlife, top class wildlife in this area. You can see kingfishers and otters. You might see water voles. They are struggling, but you'll see wildlife that really surprises you.
Can people look you up on a website?
Yep, we're on the Canal and River Trust website, Canal Rivers. trust.org.uk.
Well, thank you for coming in, Paul.
Okay.
Another exciting guest is Ralph Aldous.
That's correct.
And so, how are you today?
I'm very well, thank you.
So, you're an artist.
Yeah.
And you're into painting trees and drawing trees at the moment. Is that fair?
At the moment, yeah. I don't always do that. I don't always paint and draw trees, but I was recently staying with a friend in Brittany who has everything. And as a response to the, in return for the holiday, we wanted to do to give her a present, and I decided to do a drawing of a tree.
Because you don't normally do trees, do you?
I realised actually that over my life, I've always painted and drawn, and I realised that actually I've always drawn trees and I've always painted trees.
But you didn't realise it?
Yeah, I didn't realise it. It was just always part of what I do, because a lot of what I do is in response to the landscape around me. I tend to... I would say that my work lives between abstraction and representation. Mm-hmm. So I'm doing mental. I'm not doing pictures of Penn Common, but I'm doing paintings that are informed by the local landscape. So a lot of trees come into it. And I did this tree, and I realised how much I learnt by doing this drawing of the tree, which I gave her, and she loved it, and so on and so forth. So I decided to start doing tree projects, and I've done lots of drawings and paintings of trees.
And you bought in a picture?
I bought in a picture,
And tell us about that.
It's an autumn-themed painting. It's an autumn-themed painting of a coppiced hazel, which is quite an anonymous little plant. It was a hazel that I took a photograph of in Seven Valley Country Park. And I've used that image as a jumping-off point, if you like, for the painting. And the painting looks nothing like the original image. This is not a painting of a tree.
It's not a replica, and it's not a photorealism.
Yeah, it's not a painting of a tree, and it's not a copy of a photograph. I have to say here that it's perfectly fine to use photographs as a source, but
that's not what you do.
It's a reference point. Yeah.
And so, what is painting? And you said you're much more into abstract. What is that to you? Why do you do it like that, rather than just you see something and you want to replicate it, which is what a lot of artists do? They may interpret it slightly, but often looking at some of your paintings from the past that I've seen at the various exhibitions, you've really got to go into thinking about what it is. It makes you think about what you're looking at.
That's a big question. I'm going to try and give you a fairly short answer to
that. Good, because we don't have all day.
It is. I'm very interested in subjectivity. I'm very interested in the way we all see things. And I believe, I would say, stick my neck out here, I think that art is what an artist does is that they reveal. Art reveals the group psyche, if you like. Mm.
And that's what you're trying to reveal.
Yeah. I mean, I'm very pleased if somebody comes along and looks at my paintings and sees things. If you come along and say, oh, that's a lovely picture of that tree on Penn Common, I'd probably fail, because if I want a lovely picture of a tree on Penn Common, I go and take a photograph of it with a good phone camera. Yeah. But I love it when people come along and they see things in my paintings that I didn't put in there, and it happens all the time.
Well, and like the one you've brought in, like you say, it's not a picture of... It's not even the whole tree. It's almost like a fragment of it that you've broken down into kind of like shapes and colours and branches, but as a kind of expression of it rather than a representation of
it. I mean, we don't really know what things look like, and of course I know what things look like, but actually if you go fairly close to a tree with a phone camera, you're actually going to get a picture that looks quite different from what you see, because you're inside the canopy of the tree, if you see what I mean.
And you're a member of the Wolverhampton Society of Artists.
That's correct, yes.
And you go to the regular meetings drawings?
Yes, I think there's about 120 members at the moment. It's quite an active society.
And you've had a recent exhibition at Western Park, is that right?
I didn't take part.
You
in
didn't
that.
Take part?
I didn't
in
take part. Well, it didn't fit with my holiday plans, for one thing. And another thing, I gave myself I spent several months doing things which were pretty experimental, so just kind of sometimes producing stuff that was never ever going to turn into art. I'm quite interested in the process, so if I'm doing a painting like this, I don't know what it's going to turn into. It's an exploration.
But you sell your work? Yes,
I'll sell it if I can.
I need
money to buy materials,
right?
I mean, I am retired. I don't make a living from it. It's a hard life to make a living as an artist. People do it. But,
absolutely. So tell us where people can find out about you. So your website?
I've got my website, which is www.ralphaldous. That's ralphaldhous.co.uk. And
you've also,
I've also got an Instagram page and a Facebook page want to look at it.
Thank you for listening. Join us on WCRFM 101.8, also available on DAB Radio, every day across Wolverhampton. If you are making a difference, let us know. Check out the website www.wcrfm.com. I've been Paul Dogg and will, hopefully, continue to be so.
For more information about WCR podcasts, go to wcrfm.com/podcasts.